You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the equine network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Lisa Wysocki. I'm in Mound, Minnesota, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Wednesday, July 9th, episode 3729. Good morning, Horse World.
Hello, Horse World. It's Wednesday, the day you start daydreaming of a weekend with your horses. We'll help you get there with more silly horse talk on Horses in the Morning.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're usually filling in for me, so.
I usually am, yes. Yeah.
So it's fun to have you here. I appreciate that. Lisa's joining us because, of course, Jamie is off in Colorado having fun and doing her thing out there at that Rich People Farm. And it looks like from the picture, she's getting a lot of horse time in.
And the scenery is just amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's Colorado. I mean, it's always good.
I know. Yeah.
Well, today we have Dr. Amy joining us, and she's going to give us a lesson on abscesses. We actually haven't talked about them in a long time. And James blew one yesterday. You had a horse blow one. So it's timely for all of us that are dealing with that right now. I know Jamie was dealing with it as well. And then our Home for Every Horse Adoption Center of the Month is Second Chance Thoroughbreds out of New York. We're going to meet them and their Adoptable Horse of the Month. Plus, we have some good news I put together at the end of the show. And then in the Auditor Post Show, we're going to ask Lisa the quick hits for guests' questions. That's 13 questions that we normally ask guests. We ask some guests on the show. And I know we did it with you, but it's like 10 years ago.
So. It's been a long time. Yeah.
I don't remember the answer. So it'll be like it's brand new to me, too. So we're going to do that in the Auditor Post Show. In the meantime, one of our listeners posted this on their Facebook page, and I had to steal it. It's things you say after 50. And you and I qualify for that.
We do.
Yes. Your mom certainly qualifies for that. She's 102. So
she's 50 times two. Yes. Yeah.
And she's getting home. You've been very open about her having pneumonia and being in rehab. Yeah. But she's coming home, right?
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all excited.
She's a little ornery. Is she like ready for this?
She's so ready to come home. Yes. Yes. She's been ready. So she just had to build up some strength. So
you're going to have your hands full.
I will. Yeah. We can talk about it on Friday.
Okay. Yes. We'll see how it went.
Yeah.
Whether Lisa has any hair left.
Yeah.
Well, things you say after 50, and these are also true. Where the hell is my phone? I can't tell you how many times a day I do that.
I have been saying that since the day I got a cell phone, long before I was 50.
Sometimes it's in the barn, and then you got to go outside to find it. It's like, Jennifer will call my phone, and it's not ringing. Then you know it's outside in the car, maybe, or in the barn.
So, Glenn, you know the only reason I have a landline is so I can call my cell phone.
That's how you know when you're over 50.
That's how I know.
How did I get this bruise? Jennifer bruises very easy, and she'll come in and she'll have this huge bruise on her leg, and I'll say, "Where'd you get that?" "Oh no, you don't know." You know, it's for some reason I think some things hurt less when you get older.
True, because you don't even know.
Yeah, you just look down and you have this great big bruise, like, and go, "What did I do that?" That isn't my password either. What the hell? We've all done that 100 times.
Glenn,
and then you're locked out.
I am so good about keeping a list of all my passwords, and none of them still work. They still don't work.
That's right. And then a lot of us keep the list, and it's maybe, you know, on something it shouldn't be on. And then you cross out 57 times when you change your passwords, and then you can't read the one that it finally is.
Yes, yes.
And you're too lazy to make a new list.
Yes.
How do you expect us to read this small print?
I'm
going to give a secret here. Our show notes, when we do the show in the morning, I have to put my screen resolution up 125% to read the show notes. So,
oh, my goodness. Oh, wow.
So it's real big.
Well, I will say this. I read mostly on my Kindle these days because the type in regular books I can't read
There you go. Kindle, you can make bigger.
Uh-huh.
You're at 125% too.
There you go. Don't tell anybody.
Where did I put my glasses? I don't have that trouble because I can't see anything without them. So I need to have them on.
Yeah. So my glasses are more of a wire rim style. And if I take them off, I can't see them. I can't find them. So
you need a little beeper.
I know. That's an idea. Yeah. Little flashing thing.
I don't like this one. I don't care if it doesn't look fashionable, it's comfortable. Well, that's every horse girl ever, no matter what age, just said that. So.
This is true. This is true. Yeah.
You're going to the doctor's office with your barn clothes on. I mean, it's, you know.
Yes. Yes.
Who the heck is calling me at 9:30 p.m.? Jamie. Jamie is the one. She texted. I forgot to text her back, too. She texted me at 10:30 last night. Now, where she is, it's probably 2 hours difference, right? But I was like, I am not texting her back at 10:30. And I still haven't. So there you go.
I'm the opposite, Glenn. I mean, I'm like, text me at 11:30 or midnight, fine. But don't text me before like 8 a.m.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think I have texted you before 8 a.m.
You have. Yes,
I definitely
we'll let
have.
It slide.
It's funny because Ashley gets up really early to start work because of the kid.
Yeah.
So she'll be working at 5 o'clock in the morning because she has quiet time.
Sure.
So I've always started early. We usually start show prep around 6. So we will be texting each other at 6 o'clock in the morning. So yeah. So I sometimes forget that other people aren't awake yet.
It's fine. I'll forget.
Does anyone? This is grumpy old guy. This is what this is. Does anyone say please and thank you anymore?
No.
The answer is no. How do you throw your body out to whack? How do you throw your body out of whack just sleeping wrong? That's so true.
Yeah, you get up and think, oh, I can't move that limb.
No, it's so true. Have you ever had the thing, this is way too much information, where your arm goes dead at night and you wake up? I get the thing I think I must have something pinched because I'll wake up and my arm is completely dead. There's like no blood in it. It's cold. And I have to hang it to get blood back in it. It's the scariest thing ever when it happens.
Oh, yeah. No, I get like the pins and needles thing where if I've been sleeping on it wrong, you know, where you know, it just kind of feels like you got to shake it a little bit to get blood going. But no, I haven't had that.
No, imagine it being completely dead.
Yeah, it's a little scary.
Yeah, it is scary, but it comes back to life. So,
that's nice.
I've read about it. It's apparently pretty common. So I don't know. I love this one. This scale can't be right.
So I will tell you this. We have a scale in the barn that weighs maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7 pounds lighter than the scale I have in my house.
Which one's right? So,
well, that's it. I don't know, but I'm going with the one in the barn.
Yeah, just use that one. And why does a doctor's office scale never match the one we have at home?
Never. Yeah.
Maybe it's because, you know, at home we weigh ourselves without clothes on, but, you know, at the doctor's office, you got clothes. That's what I say it is. That's what I always say.
So when my mom left the hospital to go to the rehab, they weighed her. And when she got to the rehab, like 20 minutes later in the medical mobility thing, they weighed her and she weighed 4 pounds different.
There you go.
In 20 minutes.
There you go. Final one. Why did I come into this room? I did that this morning. I had no idea why I walked in the room. I was like, I know I came in here for a reason.
All the time.
All the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's two things you can count on. These kind of things happening when you get older and time going faster. That old cliche is so true.
It's so true.
It really is.
Don't you remember, Glenn, when you were a kid and the day just seemed like to last forever? You're out playing in the woods or something and it's like just lasted forever.
We did a lot in one day.
Now
you can do one thing and it's like day's over.
I know. Yeah.
All right. Let's do some daily winnies. Speaking of doing things, we have to do that. Well, happy birthday to Alicia, Karen, and Joy. Happy birthday to all of you. We hope you have a fantastic day. And we also want to welcome a brand new auditor, Jen. Welcome to the club. We're glad you're here. And you can just search for HRN Auditors on Facebook to join the party. We really appreciate your support. And it's your turn.
Well, Well, I know we have listeners who know my mom, and so don't tell her I'm talking about her, but you know, she's been in the hospital and rehab. And my daily whinny, I'm just so impressed with healthcare workers, Glenn. I mean, with nurses and nurses' aides and anybody who works in the hospital. I mean, that is a thankless, tireless job, and everybody does it so well and does it with a smile on their face. And I'm just enamored of everybody.
I imagine she's a little cantankerous.
She can be, although she can be very nice too, you know, but you know, she's been a month. She's been gone. And,
oh, yeah,
and
that's a long time for anybody.
It's a long time, and she's ready to come home. And,
well,
and
not only that, you know, she has not been to the track in a month,
she has not been to the track in a month, but Dr. Lynn Hovda, who is the track veterinarian at Canterbury in Shakopee, Minnesota, has been kind enough to stop by the rehab, you know, a couple times a week. And she drops off the programs and the overnight sheets.
Oh,
and so mom's placing her bets in her mind and on paper. You know, last Saturday she would have won $600.
Oh my God. So, that's how you know you're a regular at the track.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's when the track veterinarian comes to visit you in the hospital. That might be a first, actually. Okay, that cracked me up.
Yeah. So anyway, it'll be glad to get her home. And as I said, we'll talk about it on Friday, and we'll decide whether or not I'm a blithering idiot or not.
I hope I'm cantankerous at 102, too.
Oh, you will be.
Yeah, I hope so.
You will be. It's something to look forward to.
That's right. I haven't talked to you lately. How about the movie? How's the movie on your book coming out?
Oh, wow. It's going. Yeah. So Glenn, you know, they moved me from like an equine consultant to a producer just because
Does that mean a bigger paycheck?
Thing is so involved. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's but there's still lots of areas I have no say over and don't understand. But right now they're doing things like insurance and child labor laws and, you know, vetting. They've got the locations.
Are there
chosen.
A lot of little kids in your book? I don't remember.
No, just
kids.
One.
Yeah.
Just one. Yeah. But, you know, we want to make sure that person's taken care of. And so there's just a lot on that end that I'm learning about that has to be taken care of. And
this is the reason the credits for movies are 85 pages long.
Exactly. And, you know, every person who's in those credits, you know, I'm learning, man, that movie wouldn't have happened without them, you know, or somebody like them. So, you know, the person who refers you to the correct insurance person who's going to give you full coverage for a great price, you know, it's a lot. So it's moving. The script is finalized. So that's good.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few changes from the book. It's a big one. It's a big one. And so I'm excited about that. And the foreign distribution rights, I believe, are sold, and we're working on domestic. And, you know, they want all that sold before we start filming. And so, yeah, it's just going. And it's
so have you done casting yet? I know you decided where you're doing it, but
we're filming mostly in Kentucky, and so we've got horses that we have kind of on a short list, and we have actors that we have on a short list, but haven't really formalized anything yet. So and I think part of that is they are finalizing the shoot dates, and some people may be available on this day but not this day. And so then the director of photography is doing like a timeline and a shoot list, like, okay, we're going to do this scene and then this scene and this scene, and they do it to maximize whatever.
I always wanted to know how they organize that. Is it all just spreadsheets?
Yeah, that's what I've seen.
Because, you know, there's a lot that goes into, okay, we're going to do these five things on this day. And they know exactly what they're going to do, what props they need, what, you know, what people they need, all of that. Is that all spreadsheets?
Yeah, at least that's what I'm seeing from this particular
project.
I always
wondered that.
And so one of my responsibilities is okay, so we have a scene and there's a horse in the cross ties. Okay, so what do we need for that scene? And so it's my job, you know, as the horse person, to say, okay, we need cross ties and we need this brush and we need this kind of polo wrap. And then that goes to the director and says, oh, rather than a pink polo wrap with this scene, can we use a blue one, you know? And
this is going to be so cool for you to see how it all works.
It's just fascinating, and I'm really enjoying the process. It's frustrating sometimes, a lot of it because I don't understand, you know, all the talk and all of that. So I have to stop people and say, well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Treat me like I'm five.
Well, this is cool, though. I'm excited that you get to do all of this. It's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an educational process. So,
and I assume at some point there'll be a call for extras in the Kentucky area, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, we've already talked to some people like at the Pony Club and some other places, you know, and we're going to need extra crew people, particularly on the horse side, people who know how to groom and, you know, can hold horses and things like that. So, yeah.
Oh, so we'll definitely make those announcements on the show, too. So,
oh, that'd be awesome.
So our auditors and listeners can get involved.
Yes.
That'd be fun.
And we're trying to find out some other ways that we can keep people involved on the pre-production and production process, too.
Do you think if I snuck up there for a day or two, I could get on set and see how it all works?
Oh, you could maybe be in it.
Oh, that'd be fun. Jamie and I show up. There you go.
Jamie should show up.
We should. Yes. We really should.
Yes. Yes. That would be
if
fun.
Nothing, we'll crash the party and get arrested. It'll be one of the two. It'll make a good story, too.
There you go. I love it.
Well, congratulations. I'm still very excited for you. And we'll keep everybody informed how it's going.
Yeah.
Well, bad news, though, over at the U.S. Army. It announced that it's going to be shuttering most of its ceremonial horse programs, including ones at almost every fort. They're going to be getting rid of 141 horses. They said they'll be transferred out, adopted or donated, but not sold. So they're allowing the Army to redirect resources toward, this is their what they're saying, they're going to redirect resources toward warfighting priorities. And they're talking about saving $2 million a year annually on the horse programs. Now, the two caisson platoons, one in Arlington, that's the one they just spent all that money fixing.
Yeah.
And then the one at Joint Base San Antonio, those two are going to remain in place. They're the only horses that will remain in place in the Army, and they're going to continue to provide the funerals and stuff. The Marine Corps actually has two equine units, one for mountain training and the other for ceremonies. They actually, that mountain training came in handy, and they did train special forces, because I know, because Jennifer's brother was part of that, when it came to Afghanistan. So there were horse soldiers, and they were part of the special forces that trained in Afghanistan. Jennifer's brother had an advantage because he rode horses when she had horses, right? So he learned to ride from her. But they're going to keep that one apparently for now anyway, and then they have another one for ceremonies too. The Navy and Air Force do not have any horse programs at all. So it's going to come down to the two caisson units and then the two Marine Corps units are going to be the ones left. And I don't see them getting rid of mountain training for the Marine Corps, because there are times that the special forces need to know how to ride a horse.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, you would think. And I hope that they make it public, you know, the whole process, because I think some of those horses would be great.
They're going to be well-trained.
Yes, for sure. They'd be great therapy horses, or they'd be great lesson horses.
Yeah, because most of them are parade horses. So, you know, they're going to be really good at all that stuff. Therapy would be great, actually.
Yeah. I hope they make that public thing as to how to apply to get one of those horses.
And usually they have good-looking horses. They didn't have homely ones either. So, I mean,
they're all very impressive looking.
So, kind of a sad day, in a way, for that.
As horse owners, we spend a lot of time on the road. Let U.S. Rider help keep you covered. Our equestrian motor plan offers fast, reliable, nationwide service from our highly trained roadside assistance team. 24/7 coverage for both you and your horse. Membership includes horse trailer servicing, towing, flat tire repair, even on dual wheels, battery assistance, and lockout service on any vehicle in your plan. We also have your equine companions covered with referrals for emergency vet services, farrier referrals, and emergency stabling assistance. Get peace of mind on the road for you and your horse. Join U.S. Rider today.
Well, let's get to our first guest. This Horse Health Report is brought to you by Daily Dose Equine Non-GMO Core Nutrition for horses and ponies of all ages. Who do we have today, Lisa?
We have Dr. Amy San Anastasio. She is from the Virginia Maryland College of Veterinary Medicine, and she specializes in hooves and feet. Well, Dr. Amy, we're so glad you're here, because Glenn has a horse with an abscess. I just had a horse that got over an abscess, and this is so timely, I think, for so many people. Thanks for coming on.
Sure. Happy to be here. It's definitely a problem we see a lot of.
Oh, I'm sure you do. And so can you give us a general overview of what an abscess is and why they are so common?
Sure. Yeah. A subsolar abscess would be the proper name for it. And that basically is just a collection of pus and other inflammatory materials that collect underneath the hoof capsule, usually under the sole. And it causes a lot of pain because it's basically this pocket of fluid that appears due to some kind of inflammation or infection. And it's pinched between the coffin bone, which is obviously a very hard bone, and then the hoof capsule, which is also really hard. So as that inflammation and pus kind of collect, it's sort of pressing more and more on the nerves that supply the foot. So it definitely can look very dramatic.
Oh, absolutely. And so what causes this?
There's a couple different potential causes. The most common cause that we usually see in our horses on an everyday basis is just when the bacteria infiltrate through mostly the white line in the bottom of the foot. So the white line is kind of the weak point. The hoof wall itself is pretty uniform and there's no gaps if it's healthy. And the sole, same thing, it's pretty uniform, no gaps. But then where the junction of the two go, and you can kind of see this on the bottom of the foot, especially when it's nice and clean, there's kind of interdigitating areas that expand and contract with moisture levels and heat. And those areas, when they contract, they can allow dirt and debris and bacteria to migrate up under the hoof capsule next to the dermis, which is where all the blood supply and nerves come from the foot. And that's where we start getting the body to respond and dump inflammatory materials and white blood cells and make the pus in response to the dirt and debris migrating up there.
Oh,
so we tend to see a lot of them painful. Now with, what's that? I'm sorry.
Oh, I know. I was just saying, it's so painful.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Because if you ever had a blood blister underneath your fingernail, it's a similar experience, I think.
Oh, that's a good analogy. So I have a therapeutic riding center in Tennessee. And so it's wet and then it's dry and then mm-hmm. it's wet and it's dry. And our horses are barefoot. And mm-hmm. we have one horse in particular. He's a Belgian Thoroughbred Shire cross. And he has a Belgian Shire body on Thoroughbred feet.
Oh, geez. And, yep.
Yeah. And so,
couldn't get the Belgian feet, could he?
Yeah. So he's got these really shelly thoroughbred feet and on this huge, 1,600 pound body. And so we're constantly battling abscesses with him. And so, I'm assuming then, the dirt and the debris and when it's wet, the gravel gets in mm-hmm. up under that white line. And,
mm-hmm.
and
exactly.
There we go again.
So let me ask you that while she said that. We had a percheron that had terrible, like chronic abscess. It was a nightmare. Mm-hmm. We battled with that for 6 months. And then all the old farmers up in Pennsylvania would say, yeah, draft horses get more abscesses. Is that true?
It does seem to be true in some respects, but it's probably, a result of their hoof conformation, really. So they tend to have, because their body's so big and their feet, even when they do have normal size draft feet, not little thoroughbred feet, they do tend to get a flat sole. Their white line stretches, partly just a matter of all the body weight on it. And that when the white line stretches, that does make them more predisposed. And some of the drafts, horses in general, but especially heavy breeds, their hoof wall will start to crack with the forces on them. And then that mm-hmm. provides another entry point for bacteria, which will seed the infection for the abscess.
I know my wife ended up doing something drastic. I mean, it was drastic. I forget what we soaked his foot in, but it was something you wouldn't go soak your foot in. And it was our farrier that said, look, you got nothing to lose at this point. Let's just get rid of it.
Right.
It wasn't bleach. It was something else. But it worked. And, and he ended up being a good horse.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say, we soak sometimes in Epsom salts and iodine. Mm-hmm. Is that helpful?
There's a couple different lines of thought. I would say that's probably the most common treatment to get abscesses to rupture. The Epsom salts is an osmotic solution. So it's basically meant to pull fluid. And I think that can be helpful in some cases because as it pulls fluid from the hoof wall, it actually dries out the hoof wall, which in one respect can make the hoof harder, which is not necessarily what we want to get an abscess to rupture, but it can also kind of shrink the tissues a little bit. And if there is a small tract, sometimes that tract will get slightly bigger, which makes it easier to identify and then potentially drain or maybe produce a tract for an easy exit for the pus to drain, because that's really the definitive treatment for an abscess is to get it to drain. But it also can make the hoof wall and the sole harder, which can make it harder for that abscess to find a way out. What I'm using, sorry. What I'm using now to soak my feet in is an isotonic solution. So basically, it's about seven cc's of salt in about a liter of fluids, and put the foot in that. And that's actually helps me soften the foot up more in order to get that abscess to drain.
So do horses always go lame when they have an abscess? I mean, what are the early signs that your horse might be getting an abscess?
When they look like they're going to die and fall over,
well,
that's an abscess.
Yeah. And they're walking on three legs, and yes.
It's funny because it's always like, well, does my horse have a fractured leg or does it have a foot abscess and it'll be fine? So it is kind of sometimes scary. Some of them will just present with acute onset, you know, really bad, my foot's going to fall off lameness. Some of them will just be a little bit off initially, and then they'll get more lame as time goes on. I don't know. I have seen horses that have signs of an abscess that have ruptured that don't have a history of lameness. So I don't, I think it's probably possible for them to not show lameness if it's relatively, if it's a small abscess or if they're particularly stoic, but most of them do, we see them for lameness for sure.
We have this horse that's a walk, it's a gated horse and it's about 4 years old. And that's the one that popped the abscess here yesterday. And we had no sign, until it popped. So, I think it was in just a place that maybe it wasn't painful.
Yeah. Yep. And if the horse, if the horse is on ground that's not going to put pressure on, so if they have a really nice cup to the bottom of their foot and a really good hoof wall, they may not be getting, and the ground is kind of hard, so they're not
sinking. We're sandy in Florida. So,
Yeah. And so maybe that's forgiving enough that they're not going to show the lameness signs. So I don't think they always do go lame, like they're going to die that in that respect.
I've heard conflicting reports about whether bruises can become abscesses. Yes, no?
I think they can. Yeah, no, because all bruising is a buildup of blood, usually, or other fluid, body fluids underneath the hoof capsule. And if you get that's basically, blood is a really good bacterial medium to grow. If you're in the lab and you want to grow bacteria for your study, you can use blood, and that'll, that's great. They want to eat that like crazy. So if you get a bruise under the sole, and then you get a seated and, the bacteria that migrate up into that area, that could definitely turn into an abscess. I don't think they all do, but it is possible for sure.
So I have a friend who has, again, a draft cross. She's got a mare who's a thoroughbred quarter horse Belgian cross. So whenever she gets an abscess, it takes forever. It just seems like it's forever for this abscess to come out. What's the average recovery time?
Well, it really depends. When I see them, I usually try and open them to get drainage from the bottom of the foot. And so as soon as you get drainage, you have to make sure all the infection clears out, which usually takes a few days. And then we basically have to wait for that tract to epithelialize so we don't reinfect that area. So I'd say when I establish drainage from the bottom of the foot, probably 7 to 10 days for complete resolution, where I feel really good about it. Sometimes when they're longer, when we don't establish drainage from the bottom, they can linger for a really long time. And the problem with that is that the infection wants to find the way out of least resistance. And so that's when you get most, a lot of them will pop at the coronary band, and it takes a long time because they have to basically go from the bottom of the foot all the way up the hoof wall to the coronary band. And that's a little bit less ideal because as it migrates up the hoof wall to the coronary band, it's disrupting all that tissue and the connection of the hoof wall to the rest of the foot. So, that can take a long time, and it could, cause a lot of pain in the meantime. The other thing that's possible, I would say it's unlikely, but it can happen, is that that infection will try and go deeper, and then you'll get infection of some of the deeper tissues like the dermis or sometimes even the coffin bone. And I actually have a case right now that I'm dealing with where it sounds like that may have been what happened. He had an abscess that was lingering and wasn't getting really good drainage, and now it seems like we have an infection of the coffin bone. So that's very uncommon. It's very rare, but that's why I do like to try and establish drainage from the bottom of the foot.
Oh, yeah. And I know I've had some horses with abscesses that have kind of popped out the back of the hoof, kind of more on the heel.
Yeah, like the heel bones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Those probably start in the heel or in the bar region on the bottom of the foot, and then they migrate up. And because that distance from the heel to the heel bulb is a lot smaller, those usually resolve a little bit quicker.
That's good.
Good. She's happy to hear that.
Yeah. So I think all of us, how do we prevent all of this? Because it's so invasive and it's so painful. And you look at your poor horse who's just in such pain. How do we prevent this?
So there's some things we can do and some things we can't do. I mean, you know, like we mentioned before, the weather itself can really predispose these guys to foot abscesses. So we can't really do anything about the weather, but keeping them in an environment where the, you know, you're not going through the hard ground and then the mud, you know, that could help. So if in the area, in the times of day when we, or the times of the year when we do have bad weather, keeping them in a clean, dry area can help prevent it. Sometimes horseshoes can protect the white line. So in some cases that can be, if you have a horse that is prone to abscesses, sometimes putting them in horseshoes can provide a little extra protection from the ground and the dirt and debris. You know, I have some horses that have recurrent abscesses and they have to live in shoes and pads to protect their white line and to protect the foot from invasion of the bacteria that caused the abscesses. But I think, you know, the main thing you can do is have regular farrier care. Make sure that your horses are on a cycle that's right for them so that they're not growing too long, letting the foot, you know, start flaring out, stretching the white line, cracking, things like that. That's probably the most intervention we can have to prevent abscesses from forming.
So my wife was listening and texted me. So what we used for this Percheron was a 50-50 bleach and water mixture.
Okay.
Soaked that. And then she packed it with hydrated lime.
Oh, okay.
That was the weird part. So, yeah. And then we got that from the farrier who was like, well, you know, we need to dry out this foot because basically all kinds of tunnels through the foot. And
sure.
Almost canker-like, I guess. And we do not recommend you do this, by the way, but that's what solved that problem. It dried the foot out enough, I guess, it solved the problem.
But, yeah, so, I mean, I imagine that probably kills bacteria.
Kills everything.
It probably also is a bit, just in case anyone else is thinking about trying
it. Yeah, don't.
It's don't.
Yeah, I would not recommend
it.
No,
we knew that it was put the horse down or fix this problem. Right, it was the last resort.
Right. And, you know, sometimes you have to go to the extremes, but
let's not use lime on the feet. I don't recommend it.
Especially when, because the abscess is, when you have a subsolar abscess, it means that the sensitive tissues and the dermis is exposed to the environment somehow. And so, you know, sometimes putting materials that are in there that are going to kill bacteria will also scald the tissues, which can be, you know.
Oh, obviously I got to tell Dr. Amy this because you're so much fun. So I'm a horse husband and I've always been a horse husband and my wife's horse had a cut and she was gone for a show and I had to take care of the horse with the cut. And she just told me, you know, you put this stuff on that's on the certain bottle on the shelf. Well, what she didn't tell me, there were two bottles and, and she had repackaged them so they weren't labeled.
Oh, right.
And I ended up putting formaldehyde on the cut, which, by the way, worked very well. It also, I don't recommend it, and I got in big trouble, but the cut healed, so.
That's good. I'm glad it healed.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, again, a treatment I probably wouldn't recommend in most circumstances.
That's why we do this show. It's everything you shouldn't do is what we do.
That's funny.
Speaking of things you shouldn't do, Dr. Amy, I think, are you involved in a research project involving abscesses? So maybe we could talk about some things we should do.
Sure. I'm actually really excited about this project. It's actually, we're looking at a way to help diagnose and localize abscesses because, like I said, I think the main way to treat an abscess is to establish drainage. And the preferred way is to establish drainage from the bottom of the foot, but it's not always easy to see where that tract is, even, you know, when your veterinarian's out there and looking at the foot. And so we did a project here where we did what's called a venogram. And the venogram is actually where we take a radiograph and we put contrast in the blood vessels. And that gives us a picture of the blood supply to the hoof. And because we know that abscesses cause this pocket of pus and compression of the tissues, we kind of hypothesize that the abscess would cause a defect in the filling of the contrast. So in that area, the blood supply would be compromised and we could see that with the venogram. And that's actually proven to be true. We do see a characteristic change on the venogram and that can help veterinarians prove that there is a subsolar abscess because this change is classic for the abscesses and not for other problems in the foot, but also help them have a target area in mind when they go to try and drain it. So it's a really cool process for diagnosis. So
wow, we've come a long way since the little pinchers, haven't we?
Oh my goodness.
You know what? But we still use that. That's probably still the first line to come in, using our hoof testers to try and find, localize the abscess to figure out where to go to drain it. So is this
something you can do in the field, or do you have to bring your horse in? Oh, wow.
No, that's something most veterinarians can do it. All you really need is the contrast material, which is, you know, not every veterinarian has that on the truck, but if this is something that they want to start doing, it is useful for other conditions as well. So it's not this isn't the only application, but it's easy to carry on your truck. And most veterinarians nowadays have a radiograph machine. So once they learn the technique, it's really pretty easy. And so, yeah, it's definitely something we've done in the field, and other veterinarians can learn to do in the field too.
And you're finishing your paper now, so that'll come out, get posted. You'll be at AAP, and then everybody will be doing it.
And then everybody will be doing it. I have been talking to other veterinarians about it, and I do think some people are finding it helpful on these hard to, you know, because, I mean, when you have an abscess, it could be really bad things. That degree of lameness can be a really bad thing, and so sometimes it's really, you know, nerve-wracking to wait to see if the
all the time it's nerve-wracking.
Yes, always.
So if we have a way to help people make that diagnosis and feel confident about it, I think that people will be excited about that. I am. I hope other people are too.
They should be.
Yeah, I think so.
So Dr. Amy, we've been doing this, as I said, for 15 years every Wednesday, and every Wednesday I ask the same question. Why do we have horses? All they do is try and kill themselves. That's all they do.
It's true. They really, sometimes they seem like that's what they're just out to cause problems and stress. And
it's just like, why do we do this?
It's true. It seems like it.
So you're at, what college are you at?
I'm at Virginia Tech.
Okay. And if people are going to find you, where do they look?
So I work at the Virginia Maryland College of Veterinary Medicine, and so you can go to their website, and I work in their equine field service department, and so all my contact information is there.
Very good. You've been a delight. So thank you so much for a topic like this. You've been absolutely delightful putting up with us. We appreciate it.
Oh, yes. No, I'm glad to help out. And if anyone else has any questions, I am, email is great. My info is on there on the website, so I'm happy to talk about it.
Daily Dose Equine Horse Feeds has 1, 2, 3, 4 different formulas that we're going to chat about very briefly today. First one on the list balances the needs of horses who need calories, but they also need a little bit of focus. What's that one called?
Called Mass, No Sass.
They also have a formula that's going to balance the needs of a horse that needs a lot of energy because he is a high-performance competitor. What's that one?
That one is called Freestyle Performance or Trail Mix.
Da-da-da, because yes, trail horses can be high-performance animals. And for senior horses or horses who have dental issues...
That one's called Senior.
Tough to remember. And for those who want a top-quality, non-GMO feed, which is what all of Daily Dose Equine's feeds are, but they also have a really serious budget that they need to stick to, what do you have for them?
We call that product Sweet and Safe.
Now it's time for our Home for Every Horse Adoption Center of the Month as we look at Second Chance Thoroughbreds in New York. And we have Colette, who is the executive director. Well, hi, Colette. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So you're located in New York. What part of New York?
The Finger Lakes region. Spencer, New York. Yep.
That is so beautiful up there. I remember it going is. Up there. My parents took us up there as a kid, and we went and watched the boats from the distance come up off the horizon and, you know, through the locks. It was so cool.
Yep.
They still do that? They still do that to go through the locks up there? Yeah. There's like 1,000 islands there, Lisa, and it's not too far from Niagara Falls. So, you know, it's just a cool, beautiful place.
I have been to Niagara Falls, but I have not been to Finger Lakes, but I have heard just what you said, that it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's just beautiful. So tell us how you started, how Second Chance came about.
Well, we started in 2012, and I guess for 10 years before that, I had a riding lesson in summer camp program, but I took a trip to the Finger Lakes racetrack looking at horses, and I was just, you know, blown away with the amount of horses at that time that really needed homes and were, you know, really inexpensive, like, you know, under $500. And now the times have since changed, but that's really what got me started.
Were you what did you show or what kind of training did you have?
Yep, hunter jumpers, and I always rode thoroughbreds too as a kid, and so I've always loved the thoroughbred, but that was my first trip to the racetrack there in 2012.
Is that still open, by the way?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Really?
Yep.
You don't hear much about that one.
Yeah, it's a smaller one, but no, and they have Finger Lakes Finest, a listing service that, you know, lists thoroughbreds now, you know, to help them find homes when they're ready to retire from racing. But the horses, the prices now are more like $2,500 to, you know, even $5,000. So that $300 horse really isn't around anymore.
And you kind of do what my co-host does, Jamie. She gets thoroughbreds from a rescue that are right off the track, and then kind of does some retraining to find them permanent homes. That's kind of what you do, yes. Right?
Yep.
So what's the most challenging thing about doing that, do you think?
I guess finding homes for horses that have some training challenges or maybe some, you know, minor soundness issues, and probably have been off the track a while. So now we more get horses, you know, that need a home because, yeah, they've been off the track a while and, you know, they have some kind of issue. So finding those horses homes.
Well, yeah, everybody comes to you, wants the perfect one, right? For $10.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So no, we more, you know, kind of have the harder to place horses, or, you know, so they don't always come off the track, but they're, yeah, usually need some training or some vet care first before they can, you know, are ready for adoption.
And you get them from, do you ever get them from the auction, or do you get them before they hit the auction?
Sometimes, I mean, we try to get them before, but sometimes there's a dealer, a local dealer, who, if he buys a thoroughbred, he lets kind of this group of girls know who ID the horse's tattoo. And then, you know, he kind of tries to sell them to a, you know, rehoming organization or something. So he, you know, so it's, he gets them from the auction, but then we buy them from him and he doesn't really make a lot of money. So, and that's actually how we got Megan Fury too. So
yeah, that's the adoptable thoroughbred we're going to talk about here in a minute.
I'm going to go outside. My dogs are barking.
What kind of dogs? Reason. Yep. When dogs bark on the show, you have to tell us what kind.
Okay. I think I'm losing you, so I'll lock them out. There we go.
Okay.
We have a border collie and a golden doodle and then a Jack Russell.
Oh, you have you have a barky collection.
Yes.
<I'm really>
Those are the three breeds that bark the most. That's funny.
That is, yeah.
Do you, so any good success stories that you can tell us about? One that sticks out with one of your adoptees?
Well, actually coming up next week, and it's actually from the barn where Turtle's from, there's a horse called Flag is Flying. I think he's probably 21 now. So he was adopted, you know, probably when we first started. But when we got him, he was a stallion, an older stallion, and he was on the auction circuit. You know, now he's like the best lesson horse, IEA, which is like the high school team, you know, and he's going to be doing a demo at the Saratoga racetrack next week for the aftercare day.
Oh, well, that's very cool.
Yeah. And the owner, the girl, I think the little girl that rides him is 8 or 9. Her mom's the one that owns him. But, you know, as long, hopefully he's behaving and she'll be riding him. So, yeah, that'll be pretty special. So they call him Grover.
That's very cool. Lisa has a therapeutic riding program in Tennessee. Do you have any thoroughbreds right now?
We do not. We have some thoroughbred crosses. So okay. We have an appendix quarter horse, and then we have a Shire Belgian thoroughbred cross, but no straight off the track horses.
I know you've ridden them in the past. And
Oh, yes. And Colette, I think it's just great what you're doing. And it's, you know, these horses really need a home and some care and some love. And I'm just so glad that you're doing that.
Well, thank you.
Let's talk about the horse, Megan's Fury.
Yes. Well, Megan's Fury, like I said, she went through the Unadilla auction last September because her owner had passed away in like January and she was at a boarding barn. And I think they had to, you know, they weren't being paid. So she went through the auction, unfortunately, and the dealer bought her. And then actually the owner's brother bought her from the dealer, and she needed a place to go. So we ended up getting her.
And she's going to be up for adoption soon?
She's going for training hopefully tomorrow. She's okay. She's 17 now. She had one foal when she was probably about 5 or 6. And then she had the owner, even the breeder, had more of a pet. So she was really just a pet for him. So she hasn't really done a whole lot. But
so you'll get a start. You'll get her started under saddle.
Yeah, she did race when she was like 3 and 4. So, you know, that was a long time ago. But yeah, so she had a hard time adjusting to being, you know, her whole life upturned there. So now I think she's finally ready to, you know, do something else.
She's very pretty.
She is. Yeah. I was just going to say, I'm looking at her picture and she's got this great expression on her face and this huge white, wide white blaze. She looks amazing.
Yeah, and she's very curious and friendly, you know, just like she doesn't like being shut in a stall. She kind of gets real claustrophobic, but she's gotten better at that. But she's real nice to brush and everything. So I think hopefully she'll take to, you know, having a saddle and a bridle on again and being a nice horse for somebody.
She looks to be maybe, what, 15 and a half hands, 16 hands?
Yeah, she's not huge, but she's, you know, bigger boned than your typical thoroughbred, that's for sure. So.
Yeah, she looks more quarter horsey, actually, in these pictures.
She does.
Yeah.
She's really cute.
Yeah, she's really adorable. So who do you think would be the ideal owner for Megan's Fury?
Probably somebody that has experience. You know, she's not going to be a beginner's horse. And I would say somebody where that they really are interested in showing, just more pleasure, you know, trail riding, staying at home kind of horse, you know, maybe with one or two others. I don't know how she'd do in a big like show barn or anything. I think she just likes, you know, the quieter kind of life.
Okay.
But she will need a friend. She does get, you know, attached to her friends. So I don't think she'd do well as like a single horse.
She'd probably be great on a trail up there in your beautiful woods you have to ride around up there.
Yeah, especially, you know, if she had a solid, you know, horse to follow, I think she'd really learn the ropes. And yeah, because she is pretty quiet. So we'll see once we get on her, but she's quiet on the ground.
Well, where can people find the rest of the horses that you have and more about your place?
Well, we try to keep our own website updated, which is secondchancethoroughbreds.org. And then we also use my right horse listing service there through the ASPCA. That gets us a lot of adoptions.
Very good. Well, we appreciate you joining us today and have a good rest of your day up there in New York.
All right. Thank you.
Tired of flies bugging your barn? Kill flies before they hatch with Fly Predators, nature's fly-fighting secret that can kill as many as 70,000 flies in a single delivery. Start early and enjoy fewer flies all season. Learn more at spalding-labs.com.
Well, when Jamie isn't here on Wednesdays to do weird news, and I don't have access to her weird news file, I look around and find some good news. And you know what? We all could use a little bit of good news right today in the world. So I found a couple of stories here that were good news. How about a man who took up jogging while recovering from a hernia, and he has just shattered a world record by running, get this people, 465 half marathons in 1 year.
No way.
His name's Edward Melano. He's from Great Britain. He's 34 years old. He's a personal trainer, and he logged an astonishing 6,000 miles between April 6th and April 7th of the next year. His achievement not only broke his own previous record of 282 half marathons in 12 months, but it also earned him the world title. So he now has a world title, world record for that. Get this. Each of the 465 half marathons is roughly equivalent to running 1.25 half marathons every single day for a year.
So he must have run
15 miles a day, basically.
Yes, but that means he then ran 2 half marathons a couple of times throughout the year.
Oh, he ran 465 half marathons.
Yeah, right, because there's only 365 days out of the year, so 100 days,
yes.
He did 2.
Yes.
I wouldn't run that much in like six lifetimes, Glenn.
He's a personal trainer. You know what? I'd hire him because he obviously knows how to be a fit.
But you have to go to England to find him, I guess.
You know what I found with runners? And send your hate mail to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. They're a little bit like horsewomen. They're addicted. If they get into running, they become addicted. It's like the spandex crew on the bike riding too, though. They're kind of addicted to it. I guess you get addicted to whatever you're really, really passionate about, right?
I guess.
Yeah.
I guess.
Running, I've never been passionate about. So.
Not my thing. My knees just never.
Yeah, I don't understand that one, but good for him. Good job, Edward.
Yeah, absolutely.
A pair of North Texas children with a tie to Camp Mystic raised money for the camp after it was ravaged by the floods the last couple days. Corrigan and Cannon Camp. There's a name. Corrigan and Cannon. Last name Camp, which is ironic. Just 9 years old, sold lemonade and cookies for a dollar on Sunday outside their home near the TCU campus in Fort Worth. And apparently the whole town found out, and they showed up, and they raised $5,000 in one day.
Oh, my goodness.
My guess is they ran out of lemonade. That'd be my guess.
But probably, yes.
Yes. They donated $5,000 toward the relief. So good job, Corrigan and Cannon. And by the way, great names.
That's just awesome. Yeah. That's just awesome.
A 16-year-old teen from Swindon in England named Josh Duff he's special needs, and he took a lot of bullying at school for being different. And he kind of told his dad that he wanted to go to the prom, but he wanted to make an entrance because he's been bullied all these years. Mm-hmm. And his dad was a biker, like leather jacket biker. And his dad put out a call to get other bikers to escort him to the prom. Well, apparently, they showed up in England for him. 1,500 bikers showed up.
Wow.
To escort him to the prom. It was quite a sight. I saw the video. leather jackets and all. They took him to the prom. He rode under the back of his dad's, and they all showed up where the prom was and parked and all revved their engines kind of at the same time and stuff. He made an entrance. There was no question.
Oh, my goodness. I will say this, Glenn. I'm not a biker, and I don't really have any close biker friends, but I have had experience around them for certain work situations. I will say, most of the time, they are the most kind and generous people you would ever want to meet.
And they do the rides for the vets and all of that stuff.
Yes.
Yep. And kids who have problems, they show up for that.
Oh, that's just like the best story ever.
Yeah. You think anybody's going to pick on him now? Yeah. I think he'd be dumb too.
they would be, because they can be pretty tough too when they need to be.
yeah, I mean, there were a lot of beards in that group. Let's just put it that way.
I'm sure.
There's talk about a neat story. This will be my final good news story. There's an organization called Wild Tunes, and it's now a 501c3. And it was started by a 12-year-old, a lot of kids in the news today, started by a 12-year-old named Yuvi Argawal in Houston, Texas. And he played piano, and when he played piano, his dog would calm down. And he said, well, how about if I get a couple of my friends who play instruments, and we'll all go to dog shelters, and we'll play to calm the stressed dogs down? And that's what he started doing. He started showing up at the Houston dog shelter, and a couple of his friends would get together, and they would play at the dog shelter. And
how
the
cool
dogs
is that?
Would all calm down, and then the volunteers could do more with the dogs when they were relaxed. So this began in Houston, as since expanded to include 100 volunteers playing at 9 shelters across Houston, New Jersey, and Denver. The performances ranging from classic to pop to whatever, and they find that the animals relax and they fall asleep when they're there playing. So, you know, they're expanding this now, and they want it to be in shelters all across the country. So he formed this organization, and now they're working at getting volunteer musicians in shelters all across the country to do this. How cool is that?
That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Started by a 12-year-old, played a piano. So,
wow. See, these kids, they're just changing the world. It's awesome.
So there's your good news stories of the week. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it. I have some tough questions for Lisa in the post show.
Oh, dear.
So hang on, auditors, for that. We'll be back tomorrow with the Reining Horse Association. And then on Friday, Lisa's coming back. We'll do some really bad ads. Get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We have some great prizes for you this month, so get your ads in. I think she said she needs a few. Last week ads were some of the best ads we've had in 15 years. So you have a lot to live up to. Get your ads in. Thank you, Lisa. Where can people find out more about what you do and get your books?
Yeah, lisawysocky.com. It's W-Y-S-O-C-K-Y.
And the new book comes out, the sixth book comes out.
Sixth Kat Enright book comes out sometime in the fall. I don't have a publication date yet. We're still editing.
Oh, you've been spending a lot of time with your mom. So,
yeah.
Well, we're looking forward to that. And if you want to read the first five, head on over to lisawysocky.com.